Continuing in mitzvah Reish Chavtes, the prohibition of robbery, shelo ligzol. And the classical definition of gzela is robbery. As the Rambam presents it, that the difference between gzela and gneva is that gzela means that the person is well aware that you took their object, and it's like a bank robbery. That's what we call in English robbery, instead of thievery. So robbery means... Robbery is you take it strong-armedly, and thievery, gneva, is that you sneak into somebody else's property or a pickpocket or something like that. You stealthily take the object without the person knowing. That's the classical definition of the difference between gneva and gzela as the Rambam presents it. Although I saw, interestingly, in the art scroll, Sefer HaChinuch, in the back of this mitzvah, they have sometimes extended discussions. So that's how the way everybody learns it. Gzela means robbery. Because gneva means thievery. So that's the way the Rambam presents the definition, but he brings in there that different Rishonim, and he quotes from Chaim, he has a whole arichas about this in his Chidushim, which is that it's a little bit more, it's different. It's not the exact definition. Mm-hmm. That gzela means using someone else's property without permission, period. It doesn't have the connotation of taking the property with force. It's any usage. So according to this other approach, so gzela just means any taking of using of someone else's property without permission, and gneva is a technical term that means sneaking and taking someone else's property without their knowledge. So according to this, so it's more easily understandable, because when the Gemara wants to say that something is the equivalent of stealing, it always uses the lashon of gzela and never gneva. So when it says, for example, shoel shalomi das gazlin, if you just use someone else's thing, you borrow it without their knowledge, you're called a gazlin. What do you mean a gazlin? You didn't take it with force. It means they're using their property without permission, period. And it's sort of a catch-all, and it's obviously not gneva, because you didn't sneak in, you take it, you know, you're planning to return it, there's no problem, so that's why, I mean, there was a problem, but not all that per se. So according to that, we saw that it's the Gemara says that Oshek and Gezel is the same. That means, Oshek means that you hold on to someone else's property and you refuse to give it back. Even though the person knows you have it, you're planning maybe to give it back eventually, but so that's also considered, according to the Gemara, an example of Gezel and Oshek. So Gezel, according to that, it's obvious why it's not Gneva, why it's a Gezel, because it just means using someone else's property. So if you take something by force, so that's not Gneva, because you didn't sneak around and take it without the person's knowledge, so it just means that you're using it without their permission. There's no... Again, there's no practical, real difference, but just in terms of the conceptual understanding of what gzela means, the action of taking it with force is not an independent prohibition. The prohibition is using it without the other person's permission, and since you're not doing gneva, so mimela, that falls under the category of gzela. I thought that was a very interesting analysis. That also explains why the Rambam, although some people say it's prohibited by gzela, also why the Rambam says only that stealing al menas lemekat or for tzchok or whatever, just to bother someone else, is only gneva. So if you pickpocket someone, you take their wallet and you intend to give it back, but you took it out and you stole just to annoy the person, or you do intend to give it back. It's not because you really wanted the thing. So according to the Rambam, that's a violation of gneva, but he never mentions this in connection with gzela, because that does not shaykh to gzela, because gzela is using someone else's property without their permission. So here, it's the action per se of stealing it, which is the problem with gneva. So maybe when you do gneva, so you're over gneva when you're sneaking in and taking it, but when you actually use the object or keep it in your possession without permission, you're over on gzela also. So it's these are just different conceptual analyses of the mitzvah over here. All these things are usur and bad, and we agree with that. This is the conceptual analysis of how to understand the mitzvah. Okay, so the chas of Rambam zichrona livracha. Continuing again, the say the Sefer HaChinuch presents it as like the Rambam, that gzela means you take it strong armedly with robbery. The chas of Rambam zichrona livracha. Afilu goy ve'oved avodah zara aser legozlo ol oshko. That even a non-Jew or a Jew who worships Avodah Zarah, or not, it doesn't matter. In other words, this non-Jew, or Jew, whatever, who worships Avodah Zarah, both of them are Chayiv Misa. They're the very bad category of people. Nevertheless, that has nothing to do with the prohibition of stealing. You're not allowed to steal from any human being whatsoever, or to hold on to their money when they would like their money back. V'imgzolo oshko yachzer. You're required to return the object if you did it. Uva Gemara Amru Zichronim Levracha. The Talmud says in Maseches Bava Kama Shafilu Anoshim Shemuter LaAbed Gufan. So there are certain types of people that you're allowed to cause their death because they are such poor members of society. Even if you're not going to go and shoot them in the head, you can, you know.
You mean poor? You mean they're not law abiding or whatever?
Right. They're going to cause the destruction.
Not good, fair, poor.
So, oh, now we're cold.
No, now it's on.
Oh, now it's on? Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Fine, good. So people who are destructive members of society, there is a permission to bring about their deaths, that we're not commanded in any way to try to keep them alive or try to keep them members of society. So it could go in haminin, like heretics. Heretics mean, it doesn't. So what does this mean? They're allowed to cause the death of heretics, meaning we're talking about in a people who are actively seeking to undermine the Jewish religion. If we're talking about, for example, if you go back 200 years, so you would have organized Jewish communities in all over the world, even if you didn't have an official Jewish country, right. And the community was run in the authority of religion, that you had a Rosh HaKahal, you had the rabbis being the spiritual leadership, you had a whole community was organized in order to adhere to Jewish law and uphold the Jewish religion. So if you had people who were going around actively undermining it, we're not talking about passively, oh, I don't keep Shabbos, I'm lazy, but they're actively spreading heresy and undermining the Jewish religion, then you're allowed to bring about their demise. And this obviously does not apply, before we get the wrong idea. So we assume that people who are not from today are tinokos shenishba, that they were basically, they're not really accountable for their actions 100% because they were brought up that way. This, we're talking about people, when we say minim, we're talking about people, even though you could be in the technical definition of a min, even if you're a tinok shenishba. In other words, if you don't believe in God, so you're a min. But that's not what we're talking about over here. So
it's like, say, Pablo Christiani, who's a heretic,
right,
who actually was trying to convert the Jews.
100%. And he was actively going to the Spanish government at those times, when Jews were still allowed to live in Spain. And he was trying to tell them, no, you should force the Jews to convert. They're terrible. You should, you know, whatever. He's the one who had the public disputation with the Ramban over which religion was correct, Judaism or Christianity. And they say that, I don't know if the historians agree to this, but the lore is that the Ramban so clearly won the disputation that that's why he was forced to leave Spain and move to Eretz Yisrael, because he feared for his life that the Christians were now going to come after him even more, that he had such a good performance in the debate. So someone like this, obviously, get rid of him. He's a danger to everyone.
How about some of those militant Jews for Yashka who could? Are they still running around?
No, first of all, most of them aren't Jews. Second of all, they're definitely not.
I mean, these people don't.
Nothing, no.
I mean, with all due respect, I mean, these people, I mean, I'm just speaking for myself, they don't really bother anyone. Yeah. They're just, you know, little voices on the side. They're not. Okay, they have this mishigasim and they send literature around, but to say that they're actively trying to undermine the Jewish community, give me a break.
The energy put against the missionaries was put into chinuch.
Right.
The effect.
Very
right?
Well said.
Oh, I like that. Well. Very good. So someone like that, or someone like, there have been lots of people like that, Jews especially, who converted throughout the ages. But even if they didn't convert, and he's undermining the stability of the Jewish community, maybe even Baruch Spinoza. They put him in excommunication, but they probably didn't kill him because the Dutch authorities would have cracked down on the Kahila, and they probably would have executed the people who killed Baruch Spinoza. Okay. Whatever, there nowadays, obviously, there are other reasons not to kill people like this, because the American government will get you, and you don't really have the authority to do it.
But it's not
going to
help very much.
Right, it's not going to help that much, but in a situation where it's going to help, so, right. But in other words, we nowadays assume that people who are not from are tinok shenishba, and they're not fully responsible for their actions, they're not actively, they don't know what's going on and actively trying to undermine the Jewish community, so therefore they certainly don't fall under this category, even though, again, the word min could be used to describe them, like the Rambam says, and that there are certain categories of people who have no chelak l'olam haba, they're not considered full members of the Jewish community in terms of beliefs, because they have beliefs that are completely improper, and one of them is called, in other words, he distinguishes between a kofir b'torah, and a min, and an apikoros, and different, you know, people who hold different types of heretical beliefs. We're not making these technical halachic distinctions in terms of people who don't have the proper beliefs, and therefore they won't have a chelak in olam haba. We're talking about specifically somebody who's, again, trying to undermine the community and whose continued existence would really be dangerous. So even such a type of person, asur la'abid mamonam v'ligzol alignov mehem. Even though you're allowed to kill them, bring about their death, you're not allowed to steal from them. Why?
Because it's not good for
you, Neshama. In other words, maybe this min has a child, and the child will grow up to become the Godel Hador, and then when you kill his father, so he'll inherit the entire fortune, and he'll be able to sit and learn in peace. So therefore, why should you steal from the father? The Odefshar Lomar Shekavon. Oh, so there's a machlokes, by the way, as to actually some say that you're just not allowed to destroy their property and get rid of it, because that's just a waste, but you are allowed to take it for yourself. So this is the normative approach over here. They're not even allowed to take it for yourself because they might have heirs who could really use the money. Like Mrs. Birnbaum said, that part of the reason that Chazal told us that we're not allowed to steal from people like this is because you don't want to get yourself used to stealing. You can't compartmentalize so much. You're allowed to steal from these types of people. You're not allowed to steal from these types of people. The whole point also why the Torah said you're not allowed to even steal from a goy oved avodah zarah is that part of the blanket prohibition. You're not allowed to steal from anyone. It's going to be very bad for your soul if you get used to these terrible character traits. It's a strong cord, a rope, that can pull sin behind it. So even if you're not engaging in a sin right now, if you get used to this idea that you're entitled to someone else's money and you can just grab it if you want, then that's bad. You're going to start doing it in inappropriate situations as well. V'chein midinei mitzvah, further laws of the mitzvah, mash amar zichrona levracha, sha'gozel chayiv lahachzer ha'gezela atzma. That somebody who's robs has to give back the exact object that the person stole. Sh'nemar, v'yishivis ha'gezela asher gozel. You have to give back the stolen thing that you stole. So it's emphasizing it has to be the exact thing. It has to be a similar object to the object that you exactly stole.
Why would you steal if you have to give it back?
Because we don't.
You're not giving
me Mekayim the Mitzvah. The whole point is that you're hopefully going to do some tshuva and you're going to regret that you stole and you're going to give it back. Uh-huh. Or the Beis Din is going to find out about you and make you give it back. We're not dealing with the most upstanding members of society here. That according to the Deoraisa basic halacha, it's to the extent that you stole a beam. So the builder of the Empire State Building stole one of those I-beams. What?
The girder, yeah.
Yeah. And now it's built into the Uvanava Bira, and you built the Empire State Building, and you have one iron I-beam in the Empire State Building that's stolen. Mikakea kol abira umachzir morish livolov. You have to destroy the entire Empire State Building, at least from where the stolen beam is upwards, I guess. You have to destroy the entire Empire State Building and give back the exact beam that you stole. Ela mipnei takonas hashovim tiknu. The Chazal said, if we continue enforcing this halacha the way it's presented in the strict Araisa level, that is going to be a major deterrent, a disincentive for people to repent and say, oh, I stole, I have to give my stuff back. That way, the builder of the Empire State Building is never going to repent for his sin of stealing. He's going to say, it's just, I feel really bad about it, but it's just too much. I'm just not gonna destroy the Empire State Building in order to take out this beam. So nosin es dameha ve'yiftar. So according to the Chazal, what you just have to do is you have to pay back the monetary value of the beam and not the exact beam.
So wait, this is a mitzvah saseh, right? So you know.
Veishiv es hakzeilah shagozel. Yeah.
Right. So that's how by Chazal are able to go ahead and start the,
Well, more than that.
Yeah.
Because it's a monetary thing. So chvar kasavnu lamala eichish koach bi'al chachomim v'zeh. How could the Chazal tell you not to do a mitzvah d'oraisa?
Mm-hmm.
So Chazal is referring to things that are mitzvos, non-monetary mitzvos. So like the Chazal said, that we're not allowed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbos in most places, including in America. Mm-hmm. Except it's only in the Beis Hamikdash, whatever. Different shittas exactly about that. But we're not allowed to blow shofar on Shabbos because maybe you'll take the shofar, you won't know how to blow it, and you'll end up carrying it outside for Amos and Rishus Harabim in order to take it to someone to teach you how to blow shofar for you, whatever. So the Chachamim have the power to tell you not to observe a biblical prohibition if it's just something that's, don't do it. Just Sheval Taisa. So that, but this is even better. That this is a instance of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. The Chazal have the power, the court, the Jewish court has the power to declare something ownerless, and then, consequently, the property could be transferred to someone else. Mm-hmm. So in this case, they said, okay, this beam, we're mafker this beam, mm-hmm. beam, and now the beam is in your building, so now you own the beam, and we're imposing now, so now, since we're mafker that, you still have an obligation to return something on a deraisa level, so then you have to just pay the monetary value. We're now imposing on you the obligation just to pay the monetary value, and you'll be exempt.
So it's sort of an extreme case of eminent domain or something like that.
Yeah.
Where they have a power basically to, you know, to seize this individual property and you know, dispose of it. You know, all right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
V'din agozel chaveru b'yishuv v'rotzel lahachzelo b'midbar madino. You steal someone's object in the city, and you wanna, but if it's the, you stole it in the winter when everybody lives in the city, but now it's the summer and everybody's in the country, so nobody's in the city now. So you want to return it to him in the country? Okay, we're not really talking about the country. We're really talking about the desert. There's really no one who lives there. So you just happen to be wandering in the desert. You're in a caravan with this guy, and you stole his object months ago. It could be, and all of a sudden you're alone time with this person and traveling in a caravan along in the desert causes you to think a lot. Maybe the person's telling you about all his troubles, financial troubles, and he can't afford this, and then you just start feeling terrible. I'm embellishing. You don't have to have such a intense story. But in any event, you're not in the human set of civilization right now. You're in the desert. You're in the jungle, wherever. And you say, you know, I have a confession to make. And you reach into your pocket, pull out this, and you say, you know, I stole this from you a couple months ago, and now I want to give it back. So it's the person's prerogative, the victim of the theft, of the robbery, it's his prerogative to say, I don't want it back now. I can't, what am I? I have all my suitcases packed. We could be, now we're not in civilization. We could be subject to marauding groups of who knows what. I don't want it back now. Wait.
Steal it from you instead of from me.
I want to give it back. You shouldn't give it back to me. You stole it from me in the city when I had full control over it. And, you know, I just wait till we get back home and I'll take it then. And I'll put it in my safe at home. I don't give it back to me right now. So that is totally the person's prerogative to say that. And in such a situation, even though the person says, no, I want to give it back to you now, I want to give it back to you now, I want to do tshuva.
Because I see the robbers coming.
So that person is chayiv b'achrayus, that person has responsibility for the financial well-being of the object until the people get back to civilization. So let's say you're right. So if a marauding group of whatever comes and takes it, even if he said, no, I want to give back to you, and so out of nowhere, a marauding band comes, and they whisk it out of your hands, you still have to pay the financial amount of this object to the person when you get back to the civilization. So it's still under the responsibility of the robber until they get back home. So we talked about this a little bit when we're talking about Geneva. If you rob someone and then the person comes and patronizes your store and needs change, he gives you a $20 bill and you need to give him $5 change, but you stole $5 from him before, so instead you give him $10 change. You just say, here, you just crumple up a $10 bill and you shove it in his hand and say, get out of the store, just take it. He didn't look at the bill until he gets out. So Yotze, then you are Yotze. V'imhechzer l'kiso Yotze. If you, even more than that, if you just, the guy turns around to leave the store, and you slip an extra $5 bill in his wallet, you're going to access his wallet. Kis doesn't mean pocket, like it does in modern Hebrew. This case usually means like a money bag. So if you can access his wallet, if you're such a good robber, okay, pickpocketing is not robbery, it's thievery, but maybe you have that skill also, you can get a Venegaslin, you're two for the price of one. So you pick his wallet, you put in money and you put it back. The opposite of pickpocketing. So then your Yotze Vushi Yeshba Mos the Kaimalan Kirab Yitzchak the Amar Adamas the Mashra Kisav Vimna Maosav. So the person, basically the idea is the person has to realize somewhat that he got extra money, otherwise he won't know that you returned it and he won't be able to take responsibility for the money properly. So the chiluk is, if the wallet was empty and they had nothing inside, so he had no reason to think that he needed to be counting his money. If the wallet was empty and you shoved in the extra $5 bill that you owed him and you sent him on his way without him knowing you put it in. So then, let's say he loses it or somebody else comes and steals it from him. So then you are chayev. The robber is still chayev to pay back the money that he owes, because since the wallet was empty, the guy wouldn't have thought to take so much care of his wallet. But if there was money in the wallet and you slipped it in, then the guy knows he's constantly, people, you know, according to the Gemara, people are constantly fidgeting with their wallets, you know, counting the money inside, making sure that it's, making sure that they have the correct amount. And nowadays, you could maybe say checking bank account balances, that people, you know, have the computer, so you could go, or you have it on your phone even. People have it on their phones, they can look at their bank account all they want. So people, obviously it's talking about physical money, it's not talking about the bank account in this case, but the idea is the same, that people tend to check their stocks, tend to check their the same way, so they tend to check the money in their wallet, assuming they know that there is money in the wallet, so now they found extra money in their wallet, and they know what's going on. Uminyan shelomi das poter b'mash eino bal chayim. So again, even if the person didn't quite realize what was going on, so then it counts as returning as long as he knows that he has the money and he knows to be watching it. As long as it's not a living thing.
Question, actually?
Yeah.
basically, you know, Gneva and Gneva are treated as torts, right, in Halacha, right? Mm-hmm. It's not criminal law. This is a, you know, you basically have taken something which you, you know, which belongs to somebody else, and you have to, you know, give it back. Now, however, in, say, under American law, it is criminal. Now, generally speaking, say, a Beis Din will defer criminal cases to, you're supposed to defer criminal cases to the civil authorities. If, in fact, there's a case of Geneva...
Is that true? What do you mean? The Beis Din supposed to defer criminal...
I mean, if somebody commits a crime, based in the United States, let's say, will not try to resolve it themselves.
It depends.
You know.
Right. Okay, so that's an issue where it's a danger, this person presents a danger to society. Okay. This person is a murderer. But if the person does not necessarily present a danger to society, then that's a prohibition of Mesira, potentially. Unless you hold there's no Mesira in America because it's a just government, whatever. Mm-hmm. But assuming there is a prohibition of Mesira, then if there's no danger to society, no danger to the Jewish community, then you're not allowed to give someone up to the secular authorities.
The question really then is not for, you know, civil versus criminal or anything like that. Basically, right.
The Beis Din would resolve it. You would not refer this to the sure. Mm-hmm. Civil law doesn't trump halacha. Mm-hmm. It's when the halacha doesn't say something about a particular case, like dina de malchus dina. That means that the secular authorities are. The halacha doesn't say one way or the other. You have to pay taxes. You don't. To this particular person, halacha doesn't say king George, you know, levies a tax. So halacha doesn't say it is for. It doesn't say in the Torah anywhere it's forbidden to pay tax to any king named George, and it doesn't say you must pay tax to all kings named George. It doesn't say that. It says that it's neutral on the subject. So therefore, dina de malchus adina, since the King George is the appointed authority of whatever of the government, and he has the power to levy taxes. So therefore, halacha says you have to pay your taxes. Dina de malchus adina. If something contradicts halacha, there's no dina de malchus adina. So, remember, we're talking about the difference of live animals, which may be, it's interesting that Sefer Chinuch says that applies by Gzeil also, may only apply by Gneva, but whatever, the point is that by live animals, so you may have taught it different things than what it's used to when it was under your possession, so therefore you have to make sure, absolutely, that the animal, that the person knows that the animal was stolen and now is returned, because he has to pay extra care to that animal, pay attention to that animal to make sure that it's not going to wander off and go back to find the person who's, whatever it is. But the other opinion is that by Gzela, so a person sort of by definition knows that he's been stolen from in some way or another, so therefore he's going to be watching out for this animal being returned. V'din ha-gozel umeis. So let's say a person steals and then dies. Bein shehechil ha-gzela la-bonim kodim yush o achar yush. So let's say you stole some food, you robbed some food, and you fed it to your children either before or after the person gave up hope of ever getting it back. So we have certain situations in halacha where if the person gave up hope and it was combined with something else, so let's say you gave the object to someone else and the person, the original owner of the object, gave up hope of ever getting it back, so that eliminates the requirement to return the actual object, and now the thief only has to pay the money. So in situ, it doesn't matter. In this situation, that you now the gzeila doesn't exist anymore. So the people ate it, right? It's talking about a situation where the gzeila doesn't exist anymore. So whether it was before or after giving up hope, im hiniach karka chayavim abonim l'shalem d'mei hagzeila. If it's, so the debt to this person was subject to a lien, that is on the land that the person owns. He has to pay back from the land that the person owns. So then the children, the heirs of this thief, the robber, have to pay back the money. But if the person did not own any land and only owned objects, those are not subject to a lien, and therefore in this situation, the heirs would not have to pay back the debt of the robber to the robbed. But as a later, this is the strict din, according to the Gemara, but the later Geonim, after the sealing of the text of the Talmud per se, so they were the leaders of the Jewish community in Babylonia. They're the earliest interpreters of the Talmud. So they said that there should be, you should have to pay back even just from movable property and not only from real estate. V'din alokeach, even if it's not, in other words, normally you only have to pay back from metaltlin if it's what's called a milva b'shtar, that if there's a debt that's recorded in a document, because a debt that's recorded in a document is considered to have greater power in halacha than a debt simply oral. So you wouldn't have to pay back from movable property to pay an oral debt. But a debt that's in a shtar, you would have to pay property. So the Gaonim said that in this situation we're talking about that you stole and then died, or whether there was just a milvah alpeh, there was an oral debt, you still have, then the heirs still have to pay from the estate, even if it's just movable objects. V'din halokeach min hagazlin, k'din halokeach min haganov, sheish chilok bein mefursam, she'eino mefursam. So if you buy a stolen object, a robbed object, so just like if you buy an object that was stolen by thievery, then there's a difference between if this person is a known robber or a not known robber. And the difference is whether there's what we call takonas hashuk. That what takonas hashuk is, that the person, if you buy from a robber who's not known to be a robber, you have no reason to assume that this object was stolen, then you're entitled to, and now the person who was stolen from comes to you and says, That's my thing. I said, what do you mean it's your thing? I bought it legitimately, and you proved that it's your thing, and it was in fact stolen from you. So now, if you thought it was legitimate, then you keep the object and the person, right, you're right. And the person has to go after the thief. In other words, the original owner of the object has to go after the thief. Right, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Has to go after the thief. Whereas if you should have known better, then you have to give the object straight away back to the original owner.
Off the back of the truck.
Mm-hmm. Right. If there was mefursum and you knew that you should be penalized for buying goods that could potentially have been stolen, then you have to give the object directly back to the owner, and you have to do the din. You have to take the gazlan to court in this case in order to get your money back,
right.
Which is the din d'oraisa in any case.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, according to the strict din, then you always have to give the object straight back to the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not, you have to give it back to them. This is the takana of Chazal, again, because of takana sashuk, because so that people wouldn't be always nervous that they might be buying a stolen object and they're not going to be able to do business properly.
Yeah.
So therefore they said, no, you're not going to be penalized if you didn't know that it was a...
Right. Go after the original thief.
It depends who has to go after the original thief. According to the Kanas HaShuk, the original owner is, the onus is on him to go after the thief.
Mm-hmm.
So according to some shitas, there is no difference between a gazlan mefursam and she'ena mefursam. That there's no takana sashuk at all by a gazlan, and the purchaser will always have to give the object directly back to the owner, should it be requested. And the purchaser has to go after the robber. The reason being that when it comes to robbery, there's no eno mefursam. When there's a bank robbery, people, are swarming the bank with guns, so then everybody knows about it. There's no such thing as a number for some,
In other words, you buy an object from a vendor, okay? Now, the vendor, the question of whether this vendor is likely to have, stolen, one way or another, or obtained his merchandise, illegally, is independent of the means. Did he do it by in the middle of the night, or do it with a gun? In other words, if the guy's a goslin, your judgment whether or not, in fact, the person you're buying something, whether this vendor, is legitimate or not, is completely independent of...
No, but the question is whether this person is known to be stealer.
Okay.
Let's use a neutral term.
If he's known to be...
In other words, someone who normally engages in gzela is going to be known to be a stealer because he does it publicly. Somebody who engages in Geneva is not necessarily going to be known to be a stealer, so therefore there's a chiluk between somebody who everybody realized already that this guy is going around thieving.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, umash amru she'aser lehanos me'adam shechezkoso shekol she'esh lo min hagezel. You're not allowed to derive any benefit from somebody who is assumed to be having his property is assumed to be stolen. If there's a minority of his stuff that's not stolen, then because you could always assume, you're allowed to derive benefit because you could always assume that maybe this is from the minority that's not stolen. But if you know this guy is exclusively dealing with stolen things, so you're not allowed to derive any benefit from his property. So unless you know explicitly that it is stolen, in which case, even if it was only a minority of things that were stolen, so obviously you wouldn't be allowed to use that particular object that is in the minority of... would be in the majority, but I'm saying unless you know that this particular object was stolen, you'll still be allowed to assume that it's not. This is explained in the 9th and 10th parak of Maseches Bava Kama, all the complex dinim, of, like I said, when the property changes somebody's possession, and then that has to be combined with a person giving up hope of ever getting it back. And there are also dinim that the gazlan is kona, the object, if it changes. There's a whole discussion of, let's say you stole to steal a pregnant animal and it gives birth, so who has the, are you kona it, or you, let's say...
Anything that he hasn't already talked about.
Oh, you there's a lot. He was actually very makatzer. Or let's say that you stole a very thin animal and sickly animal, and you fed it and you made it better. So how do you divide the change of price of the cow? I mean, there's very complicated discussions, and not the place for here. Uktas mehen kasavti beseder vayikra mitzvah sasei yud Aleph. We're talking about Shavua. This is in all places and all times with males and females. If you steal from the value of a pruta and above, you violate a negative prohibition. That this is a lava nita glase, a rectifiable negative commandment, meaning you did a prohibition, so you can make good on it by paying back the object that you stole. So even if you can no longer pay back the actual object, let's say you burnt it, you stole a book and you set it on fire, so now you can't pay it back, so maybe you should be loke. That you still could pay back the monetary value, so you still don't get the penalty of lashes. And if you denied having robbed the object and you swore falsely thereabout, Yosef Achomesh V'Yakriv Asham. You have to add on a fifth to the value of the object, and you have to pay, and you have to give an Asham. You have to have a korban, a guilt offering in the Beis HaMikdash. So what does it mean you have to add on a Chomesh? What's a chomesh?
A quarter of the principal, it says.
Oh, yeah. It's a quarter. You would think that when we say a fifth, it means a fifth of the value of the object, but that's not what it means. It means once you add it on, it will be a fifth of the total value, meaning a quarter. Kemoshi's bar bekamo v'sof makos, as explained in Maseches Bavakama, and in the end of Makos. Mitzvah Reish Lamed. Mitzvah 230. This is a little more relevant to most people, hopefully, than the last one, although buying stolen objects could potentially be more relevant, but hopefully not stealing it per se. Shelo ne'acher schar sachir. That we should not delay paying the wage of a workman. Very relevant. Shelo ne'acher schar sachir. Not to delay paying the wage of a workman. Shneamar lo salin pula sachir itcha ad boker. You should not keep the wage of a workman overnight until the morning. Bezeh kasuv amar zichrono livracha shemedaber beschir yom. So this verse is talking about somebody whom you hired to work for you during the day. You have the whole night following the day in which this person worked in order to pay the wage. Shenemar ad boker, until the morning. That if you hire someone to work for you at nighttime, then you have the entire day afterwards to pay. Shenemar biyomo sitein scharo velo savo alav hashemesh. That on the day you should pay his wage, and it shall not, the sun shall not set upon it. This is talking about a nighttime worker. The Mishnah presents it succinctly that a day worker can collect the whole night, and a night worker can collect the whole day. You can say to me, what do you mean? You just quoted two different psukim. One says you shouldn't keep the wage overnight, and one says you shouldn't keep the wage till the end of the day. That's two mitzvos. But that's not true. So, ha'echa ne'amar l'hashlim din ha'mitzvah. It's just telling you additional halachos of the same mitzvah. Ve'in lanu limnos mashiyavu b'torah l'tashlim din ha'mitzvah, mitzvah b'fnei atzma. If there are other verses in the Torah that happen to explain in greater detail the laws of this particular mitzvah, so that's not an extra mitzvah, that's just complimenting. Right. Ve'inyan mitzvah zo, shelo na'acher, l'sachir pirona aval nifreihu tochzman katzuv. We shouldn't delay paying a worker. Zehu yisod ha'mitzvah. This is the basis of the mitzvah. Im shnei ha'lavin ha'ilu nizkarim ba, but there are connected negative prohibitions. So we know what the time is. In other words, it says lo salin b'lasachir tchad boker. So it says that you shouldn't wait until the morning, you shouldn't wait till the evening. Bein schar yom, bein schar yom, bein schar layla, masahu. We know what's the end of the time. Uzchor ze ha'inyan b'chol ha'mitzvos. This reasoning is applicable to all the mitzvos. Kikur godol hu b'cheshvan ha'mitzvos, that we don't count extra mitzvos when it's just fleshing out the details of the mitzvah in different verses. Here we actually have an agreement between the Rambam and the Ramban. Harambam Zichron Lebracha, the Ramban Zichron Lebracha, they agree that we don't count two separate mitzvos when it comes to these things. Mishor Shea Mitzvah, Lufisha Hashem Baruch Hu, Chafetz B'kiyum Ha'adam Asher Bara, that God wants people to be well-maintained. V'yadua ki b'ichor ha'mezonos yovad ha'guf. If you can't afford food in a timely manner, that you assume that when you work, you're going to be able to eat that day. So literally, this worker is dependent. He looks toward it with his soul because he needs it to live. It's interesting. The Sefer Chinuch says he thinks that the Torah placed on a limit of one day because it's normal to fast for one day. People don't eat every day. Just a fact of life. Sometimes you go a day without eating. Okay, nowadays we're only used to that. Baruch Hashem, we can afford it. We're only used to that on official fast days. But in the olden days, it wasn't so great. It wasn't so unheard of that people would go a day without eating. But not more than one day. Unless in very unusual situations. Uveperush hodia kosuv tam adaver ba'amru ve'elov hu nosi as nafsho. He says because he's longing for this, that his soul is dependent upon receiving the wage in a timely fashion. I mean, you could also say a different reason, that it's tam annoying. You know, that you did your work and you should be paid promptly because you shouldn't have to be worried that you're not going to get it. So if he keeps delaying being paid for something, so then people are worried that it's just never eventually not going to happen. Just think about, you know, we have these campaigns for teachers that, you know, in the Jewish schools, they're often at a lack of funds.
Yeah.
They said, oh, we haven't paid the teachers in months, and the teachers get very nervous about that. So when the longer it goes, the more nervous you get. So if you're paid promptly, literally the day after, so then it's okay. V'afal pi shedarshu bo zichron levracha inyan acher. So the Gemara says, as a different interpretation of this pasuk, who nosei es nafsho, that literally he's raising up his soul. So what does that mean? According to the Gemara, the worker has a serious taina. He says, you want me to pick your fruit for you? And I go up in the tree, and I'm, you know, whacking the branches so that you'll get your fruit, and you know, what if my scaffold breaks and I could hang myself on this tree? Or you say, you want me to go build a building for you? I'm walking up a very tall ramp. Or if you see those pictures that always scare me about, you know, from when I think, speaking of the Empire State Building, mentioned twice in one year, but they, when they're building the Empire...
Guys sitting on the girder eating lunch?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, so something like that, like... You want me to literally risk my life by going up in an unfinished building 1,000 feet and, you know, if something, it's not even a stable building with floors, it's just beams. If I slip off, so I'm going to die. So I'm literally in life, I'm risking my life for you, so the least you could do is to pay me right away. So that's the way the Gemara interprets it, but he says, the Sefer Chinuch says, Pashtei dekra, kemoshe kosavnu mashma. It says, nevertheless, the simple understanding is, well, like we wrote, that it just means that people depend on their wages to live, and therefore you should pay them promptly.